Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummerbrick Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call and have your say, 1-800-422-416. Yes, a different world we're living in at the moment. Thanks to COVID-19, the pandemic is still upon us. There's no vaccine for the virus, so we still need to be safe and abide by the rules. That's the only medicine we got, you mob. So please do that. Now, regular usual care health checks, vital for Stolen Generation survivors during COVID-19 pandemic. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Sister Fiona Peterson, who's the CEO of the Healing Foundation. Online, Cousin Fiona, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm well, thank you.
Good How to see you? I'm well, my sister. Good to be yarning with you. I reckon good to see you. Shut up, I'm thinking I'm on Zoom. We are on radio and we are yarning. First of all, before we start, my sister, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
Yeah, I was born in Cairns. We've got roots to Shelburne Bay, Wutati mob, and into the Torres Straits as well, and all the Seed and Drummonds and Raymonds, all my mob.
Yes, yeah. Connection there, and that's why we've got connection. That means we are connected, and you can buy me lunch next time we catch up, hey, sissy? Shut up.
Sure.
Look, a very important conversation. Regular usual care health checks, vital for Stolen Generation survivors during COVID-19. So are we talking, because of isolation, borders being closed, that our elders, Stolen Generations, survivors are not doing their health checks as regular as possible, as much? Is that right?
Yeah, look, and probably many of our community members, because we're all trying to navigate this new world and all the rules and restrictions put on us. But, you know, many of us have those complex and chronic health conditions, so we've got to keep our health checks up. So what we've done is just added our voice, the voices of Stolen Generation survivors, to the calls from health ministers and health orgs.
Yes.
For people to maintain those regular health checks and not let them fall behind.
And look, with the restrictions and what have you, but the other factor would probably be on the table is the fear factor as well. You know, going to a doctor's or the hospital or what have you is because of fear of getting COVID-19, especially when we're talking Stolen Generations. They are our elders, and that would be a fear factor, yes?
Yeah, definitely. And that's added on top of the other fears, you know, because of the trauma they've experienced from being removed.
True.
Exploited, racism, and, you know, often abused in institutions as well. There's several layers of trauma there that, you know, our people have. And
exactly.
We've got to work through it to try to present in clinical settings. And many of the things that happened there do remind them of their...
And I suppose it is heightened if they're going to... not a First Nation health organisation, if they're going to the hospital or the doctors, that fear factor or that anxiety sort of heightens up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And we're in this time, I don't think we've ever been more grateful for, you know, our community-controlled organisation.
Yes.
The health ones that are always on the forefront of issues like this and how to, you know, meet our community members where they're at so that they can continue, you know, providing good health care.
Look, there have been doctor visits or checkups, health checkups, via social media, but that doesn't really work a lot for our mob, especially our elder generations, yes?
No, it doesn't. Definitely with the support of family and friends, that or, you know, all over social media, you know, that we find that... that's been useful for our elders and our Stolen Generation survivors. But yeah, nothing can replace that one-on-one attention holistic review of health requirements.
Well, exactly. And when you got to our mob talking to non-Indigenous doctor, nurse, or hospital staff, or medical staff, what have you, if there isn't that education regarding cultural connection or cultural communication, it can be disheartening and a frown or a tone when speaking to somebody, it can really trigger trauma. Couldn't it?
Yeah, look, it does, and we're really grateful for those survivors who've worked closely with us to, build knowledge in these workforces, these professionals, and, give them some tools and some knowledge around what creates a positive setting.
Exactly.
Because positive settings actually help in trauma recovery. So the more positive experiences our elders and survivors have, it actually helps them in healing.
Well, Fiona, it's a good bridge builder, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But when we're in positive environments, when we know we're understood, our barriers come down.
Well, exactly.
And that means that there's more possibilities on the table, more problem solving, more rational thought and thinking, and when we're not operating from distress, which is when we're in fight, flight, or fear.
So I suppose that just shows you, Fiona, with COVID-19 upon us and with isolations and what have you, that this shows and that the communication or the education of culture is not really up there. I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done regarding government or universities and regarding teaching professionals how to deal with our mob, especially elders.
Definitely. We're grateful. Some of these peak bodies who are responsible for developing doctors and medical professionals, they've been really willing to work with us on this and to really embed in their training this work. But you're right, there's a lot to be done. And, we're only a small national organisation. We definitely punch above our weight. But we know that if we keep going workforce by workforce and sector by sector to give this trauma lens, that we're more likely to help create those positive experiences that mean trauma isn't that barrier
exactly
that people have.
Exactly. So hence the title here, Regular Usual Care Health Checks, Vital for Stolen Generation Survivors During COVID-19 Pandemic. So I suppose a message going out to all our mob as well, especially our young ones there, look out and respect and guide and help and support our older elders in regard to their health checks, that we need to do our bit as well, don't we?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And we play a role in helping them ground their assumptions or get rid of their fears. We can continue the hand-holding, continue to advocate be that bridge as well.
Exactly.
Being more resourceful and savvy these days. We've got a lot of information in the palm of our hands on our phones. So, it's important that we check in on our elders and we offer that support and know-how.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing, my sister. Now, you're the Healing Foundation CEO. How long have you been in the position, sis?
Since April this year.
Okay, virtually just in the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's beginning, yes.
It's
so, how are you travelling with it? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, look, I am. There's so much to do. But,
yes.
There's a good number of us now in these key positions to work together to get some of these big things done that couldn't be done before.
So, good. Yeah. Well, it's a challenge, and you're up for the challenge. I know that, my beautiful cousin. Thank you very much for sharing. And, the fact I got you on air here, we're going national, I must bring up the conversation regarding key in the car, locked in, what have you. We were supposed to have a yarn yesterday on radio, but you had to cancel it because to paint that picture. What happened there, cousin?
Amy, how did that get in the briefing?
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Well, usually I would just take the call anywhere, but it was so windy. It's been windy here, and I couldn't even hear myself talk. So
yeah, that's why we're having a yarn today. Laughing with you, looking, a love to the family. Yeah. Great talking with you, my sister. You take care, and all the best, and we'll yarn soon, eh?
You too, yeah.
Love you, Val.
Thanks, James. Love you too.
Bye-bye. Beautiful. Cousin Fiona Peterson, she's the CEO of the Healing Foundation. And look, the conversation there, regular usual care health checks, vital for Stolen Generation survivors during COVID-19 pandemic. So look out for our elders out there and help them with their health checks. Very important. It has slowed down regarding COVID-19 pandemic for many different factors, isolation one, restrictions two, communication with hospitals or medical staff, non-Indigenous, is another factor. So we need to do our bit to look after our elders. So very important conversation there. And thank you, Cousin Fiona, too deadly. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Baldy on Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to News, National News Radio Service. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, Yarn with the Baldy One. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, 1-800-422-416. Give me a call, let's have a yarn. Too deadly. Guana, 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 yeah, to Delhi in and a that's with the sitters here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, yarn up strong. Call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. So give the Murray call, let's have a yarn. Now, placing equality into the diagnosis and treatment for stroke, the AusStroke Alliance is campaigning to take world first urgent treatment to stroke patients in ambulance, helicopters and aircraft, as well as road ambulances. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Dr. Angela Dos Santos, Australia's first Aboriginal neurologist on the line. Doctor, how are you, Angela?
Good, thank you, Trevor. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. First of all, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yeah, so I'm Goombangia and Queanbu woman, which is in New South Wales, a lovely place close to Nambucca Head, and then also up near Ashford, which is in northern New South Wales. So I wish I was from Cairns.
Sunny North Queensland, that's right.
Beautiful, warm place of Australia.
Local call to heaven from up this way, so fantastic. Look, congratulations being Australia's first Aboriginal neurologist. Congratulations. Let's talk about your journey, then talk about the professional work that you're doing, please.
Yeah.
How it all started with you,
So it all started, essentially, I grew up in a small town, as I said, near Nambucca Heads, and obviously knew that there was a great difference between the care and the life expectancy of Aboriginal people from my community. And essentially, I got into medicine after working with the community and wanting to make a difference. So I left school at a very young, I left home, sorry, at a young age and travelled to Sydney and started medical school there at Western Sydney University. I graduated in 2011, and then I've completed my specialist training in neurology, and I now currently live in Melbourne. So that's where I met some colleagues of mine who have been, you know, the leaders in stroke care in Australia, and have involved me in this very important and amazing program called the Australian Stroke Alliance.
So with Australian Stroke Alliance, their campaign to take world-first urgent treatment to stroke patients in ambulance, helicopters and aircraft, as well as road ambulance. So paint that picture and the work that's happening there, please.
Yeah, so Trevor, unfortunately our mob, you know, we have strokes much younger. So the average sort of Australian has a stroke at the age of about 70 or 75, and our mob are having strokes in their early 50s. So it's a huge age gap, as you can imagine. You're right in the middle of your career. You've got a young family. You know, you've got lots of things you want to do in your life, and you end up having a stroke, and that also can cause, you know, sort of lifelong disability and sometimes death.
Mm.
Now, the rates of stroke in our mob are up to nine times more likely to have a stroke.
We need to bring those numbers down, don't we, Doctor?
We do. Yeah, we do. So, you know, and the most important thing is equity in stroke medicine. And what we find is that the education around stroke in our mob is less, so less people know the signs of stroke.
Mm.
And there's just not good cultural competency across, you know, some stroke units in Australia. So we really need to improve cultural competency and make sure that our mob are safe. And so really the Stroke Alliance is aiming to do both that, bring stroke education, cultural competency into our stroke units, but most importantly, bring pre-hospital stroke care to the patient. So, you know, bringing out the difference. There's two types of stroke. One is a hemorrhage and the other one is a blockage of an artery. And if you have the blockage of an artery, the faster that we unblock that artery, the best chance of recovery. But the only way we can determine the two different types of stroke is CT scanning or brain imaging.
And that's early checkups, isn't it?
Yeah, so, well, the brain imaging really is the thing that is lacking in some regional and remote areas of Australia. So we need to be able to find innovative ways to bring imaging, and that's why we're developing a program with over 30 national agencies to put in a brain imaging capable ambulance, whether or not that's via the air or via the road, so that we can get out to patients who are having a stroke, scan their brain, determine if it's the blockage of an artery or a hemorrhage. If it's a blockage of an artery, we can deliver stroke care right there and then, and that can hopefully improve lifelong disability so that they go back to normal, hopefully.
So, Dr. D, scanners, we're talking probably big costs to be put in helicopters and ambulance and aircrafts alike, a person's life is a lot more important than the cost of the machine, yes?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, as I said, the cost actually of lifetime of disability not only costs that family, you know, being unable to work, unable to provide, being unable to contribute to society is actually far greater than the cost of treating a stroke immediately. So really, it's actually a cost saving to be able to treat people faster and get them back on their feet so that they can be home, you know, back in community and with their family.
So with the with those figures on the table, it's a no-brainer. So how do we make this come to fruition as such? You know, you laugh. That's what, because it's simple. No, they say keep it simple, you know what I mean? And common sense, but they don't call it common sense, but they don't act on it as common sense. Go figure.
Yeah, well, Trevor, you know, we're not the ones that decide where the money's spent, are we?
Yeah, exactly.
So really it's all about, you know, making sure that we have the right figures. You know, we talk about all the things that are necessary to be able to hopefully, you know, get this service up and running.
So we've still got a long way to go, haven't we?
Well, this program, hopefully, if we get the funding, will start next year, so at the start of 2021, which, thank goodness, 2020 is over.
Thank you.
And then really we're hoping to have this up and running and sort of the general standard stroke care in Australia by 2026, so over 5 years.
And so where will we be starting with the scanners at first? Which areas?
Yeah, so there's a couple of points. One is Jandakot, and the other one I'm pretty sure is up in Queensland. So that'll be the air ambulance. There's also another air ambulance, I believe, starting out of Melbourne, which will be able to essentially fly all the way out to Tassie and also do most of Victoria's regional and remote sort of area. And then with the road ambulances, we want to be able to get them out into from Alice, but also out of Alice will also be one of the one of the planes. So working in collaboration with the Royal Flying Doctor Service, they
yes.
actually provide really good care in regional and remote Australia. So we're working very closely with them.
Well, exactly. Beautiful. And it's a team effort, so to speak. And thank you very much for sharing things across. And, 2021, bring it on. And let's get the scanners out there to...
Can I just say one more thing,
please
Trevor?
Do. Yes, go ahead, please, Doctor.
Please, just everybody remember, please, the signs of stroke. So this is the FAST acronym, okay? The face. So if you see a droopy face, if you have weak arm, which is A, if you have problems with your speech, which is the S, and then just remember the last letter is time, call an ambulance straight away so that we can treat you straight away.
So what's the acronym again, please?
FAST.
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 Face, yes, face.
Arms. Speech.
Speech.
Time.
Time. Nicely said. Thank you very much for sharing.
Thanks,
Doctor, all the best to you, you and your team. Stay safe and we'll yarn soon, sis.
Thank you, mate. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn there with Dr. Angela Dos Santos and talking about placing equality into the diagnosis and treatment for stroke. And Dr. Angela, Australia's first Aboriginal neurologist, so leading from the front, fantastic, and doing a lot of great work for our mob out in community and looking for scanners to prevent strokes. So that's what it's all about, working in the 21st century. Have you say yarn up strong here on National Talk Black. Yarn with the Baldy on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. This is your ship, Murray, just steering it into the future. 12 noon, this is the time I'm steering it to. Plenty of time, 30 minutes left on program. Have your say, 1-800-422-416.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Miri dora gunagala yela dote yo Maraya yela keta me gongaya kababa na la mir wale nyanga Mir mir wale wale nyanga Somali kinye kimu kinye
Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
wanna help me?
The Aborigine.
A very good morning, you Deadly Mob. Welcome back to your Deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumma Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say here on National Talk Black by calling us on that number, 1-800-422-416. Now, Australian superannuation funds on the cusp of climate action. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Amandine Dennis-Ryan, climate and work heads of national programs, and talking about superannuation and investing. On the line, Amandine, very good morning. How are you?
Good, and you? Good morning to you too.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we're talking about getting our money work for us, but also looking after the planet and regarding climate action. So just give us a bit of background regarding superannuation and climate action and how we can invest, get a good return, and look after the planet Earth.
Right. Yes, last week we just published our sixth report of the Net Zero Momentum Tracker Initiative,
mm-hmm.
Which looked at the superannuation sector. So we studied the climate commitments of the 20 largest super funds in Australia, who own a very significant share of Australia's largest companies. And what we found is that historically superannuation funds had not been doing a whole lot on climate change, but just in the last few months, there's been a few announcements which are really changing that. Three funds have now committed to achieving net zero emissions by 2050 across all of their investment portfolios.
Mm-hmm.
And one other fund has also said that it would try to achieve that target as well.
So it's about communicating with your superannuation agent, so to speak, and regarding investment?
If people want to make sure that their super fund is doing as much as they can for the planet, they can do several things. One thing is they can look at what their fund is actually currently doing,
mm-hmm.
And whether they're comfortable that they're doing enough. So, for example, are they part of those four funds who have said that they want to achieve net zero emissions?
Yes,
and they can. Switch potentially to one of the funds, or they can also write or call their funds and ask them to do more on this topic. They've told us previously that they do care a lot when they receive communication from their members.
Well, we're talking about people power here, and that's a way we can look after Mother Earth and getting our superannuation agents as such to step up to the plate. And if not, then we'll go and deal with the superannuation agent who will look after the planet, yes?
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a team effort in that sense. How did the report come about in regards to the climate action?
Yeah, so what we looked at, the commitments, and we found that, in the last 4 months there's been a whole lot of positive movement, but there's still a fair bit that needs to be done. So we found that the majority of funds are still not doing enough. So we would like to see a lot more commitments to net zero emissions by 2050 from a lot of the funds on the list. And what we'd like to see as well is more concrete actions and strategies from the funds to show how they are going to achieve this. So it's still pretty new in the sector for organizations to make commitments. So the funds that have announced those targets have not necessarily yet disclosed what their strategies, what the actions that they're going to take in the short term are going to be to achieve those targets. So we would definitely want to see that.
Amandine, would you know what sort of ROI, return on investment, for the average Australian punter to use their superannuation for the funds of the cusp of climate action?
So that was not the focus of this report, but
okay.
All those funds are definitely thinking that they can achieve those targets while also ensuring very high returns for their members.
Okay.
And they actually are taking those actions because they think they will help them achieve a good return.
Well, we're talking about, like I said, money. Money's a tool. And if we can use that money to invest, but also look after the globe, like I said, Mother Earth, and get a return on that finance-wise, it's a win-win for everybody, especially Mother Earth.
Exactly. And that's really been the turnaround that we've seen in the last few years. There's actually been more understanding that climate change and the risks associated with climate change are going to have a very big financial impact. So the financial regulators have actually been asking the companies and the investors to do more on climate.
Yes.
Otherwise, we are going to see a lot of financial losses in the future.
Exactly. And Mother Earth can breathe again. Thank you very much. A very important conversation. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you, Mandine. Look, stay safe down there in Victoria. And we are still in the pandemic. There's no vaccine, so we just need to abide by the rules, the best medicine we got. And all the best to you and your family.
Thank you so much.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Deadly Yarn there with Mandine Dennis Ryan, her name is Climate Works, and she heads up of the national program. And we're talking about the Australian Superannuation Funds on the cusp of climate action. So you can get your superannuation agent to invest your money into protecting Mother Earth, the climate action. And if not, you can switch or make them step up and step up to the plate and look after Mother Earth and make some quid, make some money on the side. So yeah, very good investment. That's what it's all about, getting the money working for you. They say rich people got money working with them, poor people work with money. So how? Get financially educated, you mob. That's what it's all about. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn Up with the Baldy Round, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, and I'm live here at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbribrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to News, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray call, let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day. A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbribrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn with Dr. Ruth Ballant. She's a lecturer in history at University of New South Wales. And the topic today is Holocaust through the lens of Australian Jewish refugees. On the line, Dr. Ruth, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. It's lovely to speak with you.
Lovely to speak with you. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So you're based down there in Sydney, New South Wales?
I am. I'm in the inner west of Sydney, in Marrickville. Maybe some of your listeners know of Marrickville.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
The Aboriginal Island Dance Theatre was there in Marrickville many years ago. They have moved on. But look, a very important conversation. The Holocaust through the lens of Australian Jewish refugees. Probably the question I want to ask you first. Do we here in Australia have Holocaust survivors, yes?
We do have Holocaust survivors. Australia took around 25,000 Holocaust survivors after the Second World War. Some of them were very young at the time that they experienced the war, so they're still alive.
Yes.
And even my grandmother, who's 101, who is a Holocaust survivor from Hungary.
And she's still with us.
Yeah, she's still with us. She turns 102 in November.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So there's still people here around.
So the topic through the Holocaust through the lens of Australian Jewish refugees. So you could say trauma. When we talk about our elders, for example, stolen generation, we have mental trauma, emotional and also spiritual. Would that be the case with the Holocaust survivors?
Yes, absolutely. We see some of the very similar patterns of trauma among survivors in Holocaust survivors, and of course survivors of any kind of persecution and violence in Australia. We do share that.
And it's good to have the stories out there to about humanity, and that we don't go down this path ever again, and that there is. How you say trauma that affects families, individuals, and nations? Yes.
Yes, that's right. And it's interesting that you say this should never happen again, because this is actually one of the main, I guess, points of this project is to get people thinking about how we can stand up to injustice.
Yes.
Even when you're feeling in a very powerless position. And I think one of the most beautiful stories of that kind of standing up to injustice that might not be an injustice you're experiencing, but injustice that you see happening to other people, is the story of William Cooper, the Aboriginal elder and activist who was living in Melbourne when he heard about Kristallnacht. Now, Kristallnacht was it's German for the Night of the Broken Glass, when Jewish shops, synagogues, businesses were attacked in Germany and Austria. Many people were killed. 30,000 men were taken to concentration camps. And this is just before the outbreak of war. But William Cooper heard about the Nazi attacks on the Jews. And he actually led a delegation from his home to the German consulate in Melbourne, to deliver a letter protesting against the violence. And what is amazing is this is the only known protest of its kind in the world at this time.
Well, and coming from an Australian Aboriginal man, we're talking about he understands the trauma that his people has been through, and he related it with the Jewish people. Yes.
That's right. So he understood that this was another persecuted people, and that was an incredible act of bravery, given that at the time, of course, Aboriginal people didn't even have citizenship rights.
Exactly.
So he stood up, and he was one of the only, well, he was really the only one to do a public protest at that time. And I think it's also amazing because there was a lot of anti-Semitism in Australia before the war, so a lot of people weren't able to get out here to escape the Nazis because the government didn't want Jews in Australia. So he's not only standing up as an Aboriginal man at a time when Aboriginal people are suffering discrimination, but he's standing up for a people, the Jewish people, who are also very much maligned in Australian society.
Well, which is a humane thing to do. And back at that time, powerful he was to stand up with his hand on his heart, you could say.
Really an incredible gesture. Solidarity.
And where are we at with Australian in regarding Australian history in the Holocaust?
So the reason we're doing this project, and I've done quite a bit of work around how the government responded to the Holocaust and was quite resistant to accepting Jewish refugees both before and after, actually, the Holocaust. My colleague Jan Lanicek and I are trying to do is to look at those Jewish refugees who did manage to get out here, how they tried to reach out and try to help their families stuck in Europe.
Yes.
And that's kind of a hidden story, actually, and about family separation between Australia and Europe, and how often it was men who had to leave behind wives and children.
Yes.
And trying to help them. And it's really only in retrospect that we know that most of these women and children went to the concentration camps.
Mm.
And if you were a woman with just a single woman with young children, we know that they would not have survived Auschwitz. But, you know, at that time, we just have all these letters from men stuck here who don't know about the concentration camps and are trying to reach out and help and send food parcels.
And back in those times, it would have been hard anyway, because we're talking about money being a tool. Well, there was no money. Your voice cannot be heard. Also, discrimination on you as a Jew here in this country as well, yes?
Yeah, that's right. And for example, my grandparents on my father's side, who are both passed away now, they did get out here in 1939 and they left their family in Europe. And they were trying desperately to bring them out here, like taking on all these jobs to try and get to sponsor their family.
Yes.
But unfortunately, Europe, it just became too late. Australia closed its doors and Jews were trapped in Europe by late 1939.
But you can also understand here in Australia as well. I mean, like the old saying, charity starts at home. We had to look after our own at first, especially come back after wartime. The country was in disarray, but even First Nation people in our fight as existence is.
Yes, that's right. There's so many actually interesting parallels, I think.
Yes.
Even in terms of the separation of children and parents in the war, I've looked a little bit at the
stolen
way...
Stolen generation.
That's right. And that's right, exactly. And it's interesting how Aboriginal people and Jewish people have reached out to each other, even in current times, because we know that racism is again on the rise and in Western societies, and it's usually expressed using sort of the slogans and words of Nazis, like the neo-Nazis, and it's usually against Jewish people and Aboriginal people.
Yes.
So there's actually, you know, people, we're realising that we need to stand together to fight this.
And look, and as you said, the survivors of the Holocaust, like I said, in their very, very old age, if not passed on, this story needs to be front and centre forever and a day to remind the people of the world about what happened, the atrocity, but also it doesn't happen again. And, in more ways than one, lest we forget.
That's right. Thank you, Trevor. It's so nice to have you interested in the project and your listeners too. And it is about telling the young people about people who stood up and resisted at a time when it was very, very difficult to do so, and to stand up for other people, not just your own immediate backyard, but and there's an interesting saying that we tell each other. That was by a German Lutheran pastor, and it's about standing up, it's a very famous poem. First they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. So I think that's a really important poem to think about in today's time.
Deep.
Yeah.
Look, a very important conversation. Thank you so very much for sharing.
Pleasure.
Please do keep in touch and, look, stay safe in regarding COVID-19, different world we live in, Dr. Ruth, and all the best to you and your team and your family. Stay safe and
keep in touch.
All the best.
Thank you. I will. All the best to you. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Dr. Ruth Ballant, her name is. She's a lecturer in history at the University of New South Wales and the conversation of the Holocaust through the lens of Australian Jewish refugees. And, look, a very important conversation, and the survivors of the Holocaust of a very elderly age, and her grandmother, 101 years old, still with us, living here in Australia, and was a survivor of the Holocaust. And, like I said, a lot have passed on, but we do see similarities in regarding stolen generation and how First Nation people were treated in this country, very, very sad and very important conversation, but, hence the statement, lest we forget, in more ways than one. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Yarn with the Bullion, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev, Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, as BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful track there. Saltwater Band with Baddick Did You here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say 1-800-422-416. Going to catch up with someone on the line. Someone, good morning.
Good morning, yeah, brother. I'll give you my take on William Cooper. But, brother, I think there'll be a lot of black people be very disappointed in your lead story. The regular suspects, Johnny Chover and Barry Sedgwick, brother. Mm. You know, forget about COVID-19. Forget about, you might know him, Dean Thompson telling Ziggy that he was involved in Ross Bella's father and home and away. Forget about that. That's not important. Mm. Brother, the most important thing, the wooden spoon, the Broncos or the Cowboys, brother.
The wooden spoon. That's the important conversation right there.
And I say, those are Brisbane lines. And I want to give a big shout out to Yokai. Yokai's Aussie Rules program last night. And they gave publicity to Fitzroy Greenwood from Koanyama. And that's really, I really like that story. But I'm William Cooper, brother. This team is always was and always will be. And like I've always said, you know, we are the moral compass, brother. And there you go, brother. Thank you very much, brother.
Thank you very much, Selwyn. Too deadly. Regular caller here on your daily program is Selwyn. The program is National Talk Black. You can have your say and become a regular caller as well. Call us on that number, 1-800-422-416. If you are on the shy side, you can text the brother, 045-714-0550, and our Facebook page as well for your keyboard warriors, BBM 98.7 FM. And I can see all our beautiful photos there and our yarns and our podcasts and a voice for our people, National Talk Black. One of the voices, big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across the country, a Deadly Black Network, and we deliver all the deadly yarns and stories and songs and a voice for our people. So, yeah, do support them. Fantastic. Other deadly news here, young Quaden Bales and his family received close to $200,000 in damages in settlement over Miranda Devine tweets. The family of Quaden Bales, a 9-year-old Indigenous boy with dwarfism, will receive close to $200,000 in damages plus legal costs after an agreement was reached with the News Corp columnist Miranda Devine, who had suggested he had faked his own bullying. The federal court will be told on Friday the parties have reached a settlement, and the high-profile Daily Telegraph columnist has apologised on Twitter. Devine retweeted the Twitter use at a bubble bath girl who claimed Quaden was an actor whose mother had posted a fake sobbing video and collected $300,000 in donations. The columnist said that's really rotten if this was a scam, hurts genuine bullying victims, despite being told by the media watch host Paul Barry and others. The claims were untrue. She did not delete her tweets and said, typical of your sloppy research at the real P. Barry. I never mentioned anything about age, dishonest diversion. Devine appeared to link to the 19th September Twitter apology from her online column in the Daily Telegraph on Wednesday, but at the same time writing the link goes through to Devine's 22 September column. It is understood the link was part of the settlement agreement. The settlement was reached after Justice Anna Kasman found last month that Quaden had an arguable case that he had been defamed by Devine. So there it is. Look before you leap is the statement there in regard to think before you speak, think before you act, think before you tweet it, think before you write. Keyboard warriors, I just mentioned. Have you saying Yana Strong, but you have to do that tomorrow because Murray going to sign off here from the Daily Show, National Talk Black for today. I'm back in the hot seat again tomorrow, 11 a.m., 12 noon, Monday to Friday, and that daily number 1-800-422-416, National Talk Black. And like I said, text the brother 045-714-0550. Yana Strong here, and our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. So thank you for your company. Mob look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe. We are still in the pandemic, and there's no vaccine, so abide by the rules. The best medicine we got, you mob. Too deadly. Just walk this way.